Hey, this is Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle, and you're listening to The Pain Clinic. Oh, it's real. It's damn real.
The Pain Clinic Pro Wrestling Talk Show. Can you feel the pain?
Welcome to the Pain Clinic for April 24th. April 24th is an important day in the history of Rochester wrestling. Why do you say? Because that is the last time Monday Night Nitro was in Rochester. And the reason I know that is because you'll find out in a second. But holidays today, real quick. It's Pig in Blanket Day. If you like that, enjoy that today. Getting to the birthday section, it would have been Lou Fez's 105th birthday today, but unfortunately he died in 2002 at the age of 86. And it's my son's birthday, Michael. Happy birthday to Michael, and that's why I know that this is the anniversary of Monday Night Nitro being here in Rochester, because it was his birthday as well. And so, welcome to the show. The Pain Clinic's brought to you by Salvatore's Old Fashioned Pizzeria, Palmer's Food Service, and Donuts Delight, Empire at Culver. Hey, interested in roller derby? You want to be a skater, officiate? Rock City Roller Derby needs you. Contact recruitment at rockderbyrecruitment@gmail.com and join Rock City Roller Derby. If you're into the men's team, it's Flower City Fear, FLOUR, flowercityfear.com. Welcome to the show. I am your humble host, the Cashman. I'm joined this week by Ferbs. How you doing, Ferbs, out in Hilton?
I'm doing all right. Doing pretty good this morning.
All right.
That we had some snow this week, but
you have the gall to wear a Philadelphia Eagles hat. Come on.
Gotta represent.
You got a draft in a week, so maybe you'll do better. We above him in the four squares of knowledge of wrestling. We got DC Dan Cole sporting the Pain Clinic t-shirt. Sweetness, what's up, buddy?
That's right. Good morning, everybody. Happy birthday change. Don't go pressing too much pickle.
And to his left, your radio right, the boy who grew up in the show, Danger Boy. Or have we decided to call you Danger Man yet? You know, or are you going to be?
Are you going to have to wait till next year when I hit a milestone birthday?
Oh, okay. I was going to say maybe we'll call you Lil Danger, L-I-L. You know, and then you know you could be like, you know, yeah, they'll be on your tombstone someday, or Danger Boy.
Oh, now I'm dying. No.
I mean, once you hit 40.
Yeah, you know, it's a big one. And below Danger Boy is the artiste, Rob Sanderson. How's it going, Rob?
Good morning. I'm wondering if he's going to become Danger Man or if Jungle Boy is going to become Jungle Man first. Place your bets now.
Oh, boy.
Also, I can't stand the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, all right. So,
didn't hate them before college in Philly.
That's right. You went to college there, Temple there in Philly, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I'll think of all the great things that came out. Think of all the great things that came out of Temple. Bill Cosby,
Bob Saget,
the artiste Rob Sanderson,
Bryce Remsburg,
the official referee of AEW. Is he the senior?
Hall of Oates.
Hall of Oates.
Method Man. Yeah.
Wow. That.
Art Pierce. I don't know.
Very cool.
I'm celebrating this morning that I got as many mentions on AEW Dynamite this week as Impact World Champion Rich Swann. So, yeah.
And they've got a pay-per-view Sunday night, you know? It's like...
Do they?
Yeah. Ah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's...
Thanks for telling me about it, AEW.
Yeah. Well, you knew it. I mean, you know, when we get to see Kenny Omega with Don, you know, he'll remind you of it, but... Don Callis, of course, if you don't know, one of the guys who apparently runs Impact, but I'm not sure, but does. So let me jump right into that to start off the show this week. We've got a lot of things to talk about. We're going to talk.
What's the segue?
Yeah.
That was an intentional segue.
Yeah, that was. But I mentioned a couple of things we'll talk about later. I want to talk about, these are a few things that I want to talk about. Let's see if we get to them. I want to talk about T-Bar and Mace losing their masks on Raw, but that's not Impact Wrestling. I want to talk about the Steve Austin bio and that new show. What's it called again?
Hidden Treasures.
Yep. And I don't want to talk about that right now either. I want to talk about Impact Rebellion Sunday night, April 25th, tomorrow night. And it's this is weird because they moved this pay-per-view to a Sunday. Originally, it was promoted as Saturday for the longest time, and then this, you know, I'm thinking maybe are we going to get back to like pay-per-views on Sunday nights? We're going to try to do that exclusively. I would love that to be that way. I mean, I like Saturday night, to be honest with you, because then I don't have to get up early the next day.
Well, this Saturday anyway had some pretty good competition from UFC. So
there's a massive UFC this Saturday night, yes, too. I mean, is anybody showing it in Rochester? Message me on Facebook if you are, because we want to definitely go out and check that. There's three title matches on that. But we're gonna get a good feel for what Impact is doing by what's going on this pay per view, and we're gonna see a bunch of great matches, and they've been building this one of them up pretty good. Like for instance, Trey Miguel and Sami Callihan. I've been enjoying Sami Callihan working with Trey Miguel in the last few weeks. Trey Miguel is the one guy who's not in what are they called MSK, the tag team that's on NXT. He was the third guy when they were on Impact, and he decided to stay behind. And I think he's very talented. I mean, he's really a great wrestler. I enjoy watching him work. But that's a last man standing match, and I think they're trying to get Trey Miguel over, I think, big time in Impact. And he's been, you know, I mean, they threw him into three ways for like the champion, or like for the X Division title on a pay per view a few pay per views ago. Very, very good wrestler. So we'll see if the building him up on their product is still working well. But there's a lot of fun matches. We're going to get Matt Cardona and Brian Myers in a singles match. Two guys who really never got pay-per-views when they were working in WWE, or at least the last couple of years. Deanna Peraza is taking on Tennille Dashwood. You might remember Tennille was the thief who worked for WWE. No, she got caught pocketing a $19 iPhone case or something like that in a Best Buy. And, of course, that didn't lose her job, but she ended up losing it eventually. Finn Juice, which is, I think, a fun tag team, but they haven't really been around since they won the titles. They had to go back to New Japan, and they're taking on the Good Brothers. In the main event, Rich Swann, Kenny Omega. You guys are excited about this? Any particular match jump out to you, any of you?
I think the whole card is pretty good. I mean, honestly, there's if I'm looking at the card, like, I personally would choose to take TJP out, but otherwise, I like everything I see. So I think match-wise, it's got potential to be one of the better pay-per-views of the year in wrestling. I mean, obviously, Cardona and Myers, like, there's intrigue there. The main event is very interesting. I just wish that there was one little shred of hope in our minds that, like, maybe Rich Swann has a slight chance to win. He does not. But I wish that was possible. But it hasn't been built up that way. So
yeah, it's like almost like they had their handcuffs on when they were, like, building this up, because they would go to Impact, and Impact would be all in on everything. And they would come back to AEW, who has a much bigger audience. And they really just would promote, you know, the Good Brothers and Kenny Omega, but they wouldn't, like, the Good Brothers were the only ones really from Impact besides Don Callis, who were there. And I don't know what would have taken them to bring Rich Swann on there, especially this past week when they make it more of a Moxley trying to get revenge against those guys.
Yeah, that's what I don't really understand, is like there was absolutely no build on the AEW side of it for this matchup between Swann and Omega. And it's almost like kind of, I wouldn't say a failure with this whole crossover deal, but it's like they really haven't done much other than about a month and a half ago. That's really, they led up to this match. They led up to, you know, title versus title. And then they didn't really do much with it. You know, they had the press conference this past week. So obviously, I mean, the main event's going to be great. Swann versus Omega, just like Rob said, really, it's kind of almost guaranteed that Omega's going to win, I think, at this point. But Cardona and Myers, to me, has a lot of intrigue because they're real-life best friends. They do a podcast with each other, multiple podcasts. And the story's been built up pretty decent on Impact TV. And so I'm really excited to it because I listen to their podcast. But just like Cash, just like you said, Trey Miguel, I think they're really building up to be like one of their bigger stars. I mean, Callahan was pretty much running Impact for the last year and a half. So to put Miguel against Callahan just shows what they think of Trey Miguel.
You know, one other thing, too, I didn't mention was the Violent by Design, which is Eric Young, Diener, Joe Doering, and Rhino taking on Saban, Edwards, Storm, and Willie Mack. And the thing is I think, didn't Eric Young, like, get injured in that match a couple weeks ago on TV? I was pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was taped a while back, but I can't imagine he's anywhere near 100% yet. So maybe the benefit of it being an 8-man tag?
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah, I would have to assume that he's going to have surgery after this match is done because he had tore his ACL.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, you can work on that for a while, but then you have those braces for the rest of your life, or you can get it fixed and spend some time out. But it's the second. I think it's the second injury Eric Young's had since he's come back because I think he also got concussed too early on his return. But the one thing we didn't mention about Rich Swann and Kenny Omega is that they're going to bring another announcer in to announce it. Mauro Ranallo is coming to do the main event. So, you know, does that kind of make it more like, and it's a title versus title. So someone's going to walk away with two titles, and we were promised that there's going to be a winner in this match. So,
and Aubrey Edwards is reffing, so that's a thing to keep in note. An AEW ref refereeing an Impact versus AEW championship match, title for title, with Mauro, who Tony Khan has said that he wants to be one of his announcers someday. So a lot of AEW feel in this match.
I just don't understand. Like, we were so excited on this show, like when all the crossover stuff started happening, we're thinking like maybe Sami Callihan shows up, maybe this happens, maybe that happens. This match this weekend is the biggest thing that could possibly happen with the crossover, and AEW has pushed it to the side so much. Like, there was that one Impact commercial during Picture in Picture on Wednesday night, and then Don Callis, like, briefly mentions it in the trailer, like, some kind of brush off, like, whatever. Like, oh, Kenny Omega, maybe he'll have a belt in his hand next week, and we're just not even going to talk about it or acknowledge it or anything. Like, to me, there's nothing bigger they could do than what's going to happen this weekend. And so I don't really have faith that this is going anywhere. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see how this is going to get any bigger or better. I mean, is Omega just going to win it and then not do much with it and then just randomly drop it and AEW just never really acknowledges it and the whole thing goes to waste?
The only thing that I could think of is, and I was just sitting here thinking about it as you were talking, with how kind of much of a joke they've made of it almost. It kind of makes me think of it along the same lines of how they treated it with those paid ads during Impact Television and how AEW is just kind of treating Impact like a joke. So maybe they're doing this on purpose, you know, kind of just say, oh, now Omega's got an Impact world title on AEW and, you know, out of nowhere, who knows?
The biggest swerve with that is if Swan wins and then they can really do that and be like, oh, crap, that happened. Didn't think that was a possibility. Yeah. But I agree. I mean, obviously they built up Khan's character a little bit in it, but it was so awkward with all those promos.
I was just gonna say I'm gonna wait and see what happens. That they've earned enough kind of credit on my end, where the build up has been a bit disappointing, but also I wouldn't put it past them to do something shocking with it to move the story forward. I would not be surprised if Rich Swann won.
And
there's going to be a lot of moving pieces in this match.
And it just goes to show, I guess, maybe that's just how good of a worker Omega really is. I mean, he was on Dark Elevation in a 6-man tag match, basically putting over Mike and Matt Sydal. And I don't even remember who the sixth person was in that or who their other partner was, but I mean, he was in there, and he was taking a lot of offense from a lot of guys in that match. So maybe we are going to be shocked.
Well, not only that, I feel like they've almost been setting the stage with AEW recently where you haven't needed Kenny Omega as the champion running things there.
Yeah.
They have the talented roster where similar to WWE when they put the title on Brock, only not exactly the same. Like, he doesn't need to be there. I don't know. Right. I feel like they've been setting it up for this.
I just don't. I mean, even the whole like attacking the trailer thing with Moxley and Kingston, like either wait a week for that or have those two specifically attack the Bucks or whatever. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like Omega's not focused on it. I get that maybe that could all play into a storyline, but I don't think I would like that storyline if that was the case. Like, I feel like you should put a little bit more. If you're going to have a partnership with the company, you should, from a company side of things, respect them a little bit more. Maybe mention the match, like maybe have JR mentioned at some point, whatever the case is, even regardless of what actually happens in the match. I'm very disappointed with the buildup.
And I'm just coming to think of this too. I mean, Double or Nothing is still a month away. Like, there's still enough time to build something up. I mean, obviously they're continuing this Omega Mox storyline. Does it even need the title for the storyline? It should, but does it need it? I mean, who knows?
I will say,
I want them to be completely separate at this point. Like, I've had enough of the Moxley Omega stuff. Like, it almost seemed to me like maybe Moxley and Kingston were more so like kind of mentioning the Bucks somewhere in there. Like, maybe they were going to be contenders. Not that we need another tag team of two guys put together fighting for the belts when there's all these other tag teams waiting right now. But I don't want to see Moxley in another world title match yet for a long time. Nothing against him. I think it's time to figure out a legit contender for him, for Omega, for Double or Nothing, and then move on and start to build the Adam Page storyline slowly.
Good. You know, I agree. And I will say, we're going to go to break after this, but I'll say one thing. Scott D'Amore was out doing the media rounds, and Scott D'Amore mentioned, that, of course, we had in the last Impact pay-per-view, they merged the Impact heavyweight title with the TNA title that Moose was carrying around for quite a long time. And he mentioned that they still have dreams of using TNA as a broad name for a company, whether it be, and he mentioned it might be a women's division. So, I mean, he just threw that out there. I don't know how legitimate, you know, there are with that, but Scott D'Amore is one of the, on the board of directors, I believe, and one of the guys running the company. So, but on that note, we're going to take a break. We've got a lot of things to talk about. I kind of highlighted in the beginning of the show. You are listening to the Pain Clinic on Fox Sports 1280. Welcome back to the Pain Clinic, and you know, if you hear a heartbeat and then Finn Balor's music, you must be listening to a professional wrestling talk show. Brought to you by Salvatore's Old Fashioned Pizzeria, Palmer's Food Service, and Donuts to Light Empire at Culver. I'm the Cash Man with the Artiste, Danger Boy, DC Dan Cole, and Furby and you, and thank you so much for listening. We just spent the whole first segment talking about Impact Pay-Per-View. Don't forget, it's Sunday night on pay-per-view. I think Fight TV, pay-per-view, a bunch of other different places you can find it. Definitely want to check it out, with the main event really being the biggest question mark. How, you know, who wins between Rich Swann and Kenny Omega. Title versus title from two different companies. It's super exciting. Don't ever see anything like this. And don't forget, you know, I would suggest, if you're a wrestling fan, to get it. Okay, I'm just going to throw that out there. But I want to talk about some other things. This past week, we had, of course, the debut last Sunday night of the new, was it Sunday night? Yes, it was Sunday night. The brand new biography series on A&E that WWE is going to have 8 other wrestlers in the biography, getting a biography. And we got the first one, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, listen, if you've listened to this show from the beginning, I think we pretty much, from the heart of Stone Cold on, you know, that's when we started this show, during the Attitude Era, that whole period from when which Steve Austin became popular. So I remember, you know, you might have lived through his history, and watching that, it was really pretty cool. It was a 2-hour show. Steve Austin, you know, I mean, it really spent time with him coming up, you know, playing football and then quitting college because he wanted to be a wrestler and went to wrestling school and going to WCW and then WWE, where he has greatest success. And it's like, to me, it seems like it was, you know, watching that show, it was like a very short time. But I mean, Steve Austin was there for a while. He got over with his mouth at one point because he was injured, but one thing I felt that, you know, if it was a true biography, it would have maybe told more of the downfalls of Steve Austin than just, you know, kind of glossing over the issues, because there were some times in his life when things weren't so great. You know, he was arrested for domestic abuse. Now, I don't think you would put that in a biography because, you know, you have to, you know, but you could have, like, said, you know, hey, he had legal troubles sometime, you know, especially after he quit, because it happened right after he quit when he was married to Deborah. So, and, you know, he had some other weirdness issues going on. But, I mean, he's really kind of rebounded, and they really didn't talk much about his post-life after leaving. Like, for instance, his podcast, which is super huge, or was super huge. I don't know if he's still doing his podcast.
He does repeats all the time. He does it. It's always repeats. He doesn't do anything new for like the last year and a half.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I think we talked about it last week when we mentioned this, it was coming up, is that he used to hang out with his buddy and talk about hunting and stuff. But he'd have real wrestlers on there. And I mean, he had like Bischoff, and before they ever, you know, ever patched up their differences. He's had a lot of people on that he had problems with. And I think that was great about his podcast. And the infancy, he was like one of the big names in the infancy of wrestlers doing podcasts too. But overall, you know, it was a nice puff piece on Steve Austin. Next week's going to be Roddy Piper. I'm definitely going to watch that. A man we had in the studio, Roddy Piper. And Roddy Piper, I just don't know. Roddy Piper's book, you know, if you really want to know his biography, read his first book. Because he tells all the nitty gritty dirty stuff that they're not going to mention, I'm sure, about like working for like drugs and stuff like that and in Puerto Rico and stuff like that. But what did you guys think about the Steve Austin biography? Did you guys get a chance to watch it? Yeah, anyone have any comments on it? I see heads shaking. It doesn't work on the radio.
I saw it. I mean, I thought it was good. It was just one of those things where like we are fortunate, I guess, enough to be in an age where there are so many books and podcasts and shoot interviews and whatever that there wasn't really one point in 2 hours where I was like, oh, I'm learning this for the first time. For a casual fan or somebody who's not even a wrestling fan watching it, I think they probably would have found it super interesting. I thought they did a good job with it. There wasn't anything that was like breaking news, I guess.
Yeah. From my perspective as a younger fan, I did like it. I think the ending felt a little rushed. I think they kind of skipped over a lot in the like his after career, but probably about the first 35-45 minutes of the show, learning the early part of his career and early history, which I didn't know that much of. So it was quite interesting learning, you know, some of that. But I overall enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did mention that he didn't do a lot on his, things after, you know, I mean, his Hollywood. I mean, I mentioned Hollywood briefly, but he was in a few movies, but it wasn't like it happened instantaneous. There was a couple of years where he was down, but it was like a Reader's Digest version, and anybody, and Artiste Rob, you're right. With everything, with all these shoot interviews and everything, you're really, you know, maybe he told a couple stories that I had never heard before, but they weren't, you know, groundbreaking. It was, you know, I mean, how many times have I heard the thing about Stone Cold, you know, tea, you know, and how he got his name, you know, I mean, that for that like multiple times everywhere, but there was a lot of, you know, just little stories, you know, about experiences he had with people that were new, but it didn't really change. It wasn't like instrumental in his career changing or anything. Danger, what'd you think?
Well, it's like the Artiste said, it's we know most of the stuff. The show has been around for a majority of, or we were around for a good portion when he was super hot, and we all grew up watching when he was, I mean, I grew up watching him on WCW. I loved his Hollywood Blonde stuff and all that back in the day, so he had my attention back when I was way young. But so it,
did you say May Young? Sorry.
Yes, when we were May Young. But it's a nice little puff piece. I'm much more interested in the Roddy Piper one. I want to see how in depth they go and how they do, and if they get any new information from his family or anything like that. Because Roddy Piper in the studio was my favorite time being part of the show. So
definitely. How about you, DC? Did you get? DC, you kind of, that's your wheelhouse, isn't it? His career.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. That's you know, I was a wrestling fan my whole life. I did have a lull from like 94 to 97 where I didn't particularly care for it, but I seemed to luckily get back in right at the right time before the Attitude Era really took off. Admittedly, I was never a huge Steve Austin fan. So I'll be honest, I didn't watch it because I didn't think I would like everybody has kind of alluded to, you know, if you're familiar with his work, there wasn't particularly anything, you know, earth-shattering, groundbreaking, any big revelations there. So I like what WWE does, you know, with their kind of looks into things like that. I didn't particularly go out of my way to catch this one.
I will say,
I think the biggest thing is a lot of people going into this with how popular Dark Side of the Ring was and how deep and dark that they went. I think some viewers thought they might try to mimic some of that style, but
they didn't.
I think it was a little bit different,
which makes us going to pine for Dark Side of the Ring starts in 2 weeks. So just remember to keep that, you know, I cannot wait. 12 new episodes
with Brian Pillman.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention was Steve Austin. He did change the business. I mean, the time when he attacked the announcer, Vince McMahon, in the ring was, I think, the way that's when wrestling changed forever at that point, when you broke the, you know, the glass ceiling of who was who. And we all, you know, as internet wrestling fans, I don't want to call us that, but that's what IWF is, like the biggest bunch of whiners and crybabies on the planet. Oops, did I say that? No. But I was going to say, but as we all knew, Vince McMahon was the owner of the company back then, but he was the announcer, and there was a fine line drawn that no one ever crossed between Vince McMahon, you know, being the owner and Vince McMahon being the announcer. When Stone Cold Steve Austin won that title, Vince McMahon suddenly turned into Mr. McMahon. That was the creation of that character. That really sparked the Attitude Era. It really sparked those high ratings. And it's just because, you know, yes, and they made a big point of it in the show. You're beating up your boss. You know, it's like everyone wants to beat their boss up, don't they? Huh? What? What? And it's like, he, you know, it's like, yes. And that was super cool. But that's what they were banking on when he did do that, you know. And it's like, man, I got to tell you, if I got to see Vince McMahon take that wrong stunner every time they talk about it, I'm so tired of seeing that. It was just, you know, he didn't do it right or whatever, you know.
He just kind of falls flat and convulses.
I like that he took it that way, though, because he's not a wrestler, so he shouldn't know how to take it. I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed watching it again. Like, it's all stuff that we already knew, but like, it's a very interesting story. And it sparks memories, maybe things you haven't thought about in a while, about, you know, had Triple H won King of the Ring 96, how much different would everything be right now? I mean, there's a lot of what ifs there and stuff. So I'm looking forward to more episodes of it.
You know,
honestly looking forward more to like the ones that are also stories that have been told ad nauseum, like Bret Hart and those ones, but
the screw job.
It still seems like a good series.
You know, yeah. And I was going to say that I think that might be the first time we ever saw the curtain call footage in a WWE program. Cause that they really, and that's true. They explained, you know, and Triple H is like, I don't think anything would have been different if that hadn't happened to me. He still thinks Steve Austin would have succeeded. They asked him, and he immediately said it, that what he doesn't think it would affect anything. But what was he supposed to say? It's his father-in-law, who, his current father-in-law at the time, it wasn't his father-in-law, who punished him for the curtain call. So, and the curtain call is a famous.
I think a lot of things could have been different, though, and honestly, maybe Triple H might have peaked before Austin, and then that whole era after Austin was basically done or was out hurt and stuff, maybe Triple H wouldn't have been the guy. Like, there's so many things that could have been different. I just love hearing like Steve Austin say that, like, he decided he was going to be called from Victoria, Texas, this big town or whatever. There's like one exit off this little highway. Do not go to Victoria, Texas. You're not missing anything. Trust me.
I just want to know what Triple H was thinking with that. The whole reason Austin started getting over and they started putting a little weight behind him after he won the King of the Ring is because he cut that promo with the Austin 316. If he doesn't take on Jake Roberts in that match and cut that promo impromptu on Austin 316, he doesn't get that push. So Triple H is full of crap.
Well, I will say one thing. He also he had two lines in that promo. That one and Austin, you know, you know, Austin 316 said, I just whipped your ass. That one. Those two lines came out and sold millions and millions and millions of T-shirts. And, you know, and I mean, it proved, you know, what, you know, on the fly, this guy knows, you know, that the company just launched off that moment. But yeah, that it's interesting. I thought, you know, it was interesting going back and looking at that and seeing, you know, you could, man, someone should write some fan fiction and do like a what if, you know, what if Triple H, you know, this hadn't happened, you know, because I mean, that's a perfect that's a perfect place to go. But we got a break. I know
it's such an important message for all the wrestlers these days because everything is so overproduced and overscripted and everything that like. What changed the business were these things that Steve Austin came up with on his own on the fly.
Yeah.
Not something that was handed to him with bullet points or anything else. So if you're going to become a star in wrestling, you got to be able to improvise like that.
And on that note, Cashman 316 says we need to take a break. You're listening to the Pain Clinic on Fox Sports 1280. Welcome back to the Pain Clinic. I am a Cashman with Furby, DC Dan Cole, Danger Boy, and the Artiste. And hey, 1 week from tomorrow, Lex Luger is going to be in Rochester at the Eastview Mall. Heroes Hideout, brand new store opening next weekend. Lex Luger's coming to do an autograph session. You want to meet Lex Luger? Hopefully, maybe we'll have him on the show next week to promote it. I'm hoping, but we'll see what happens. If not, go down and meet them at Eastview Mall. It's right next to the Apple Store. You know where the Apple Store is in Eastview Mall? If you spent any time in Eastview Mall waiting for them to fix something, you know where the Apple Store is because you get stuck on a bench outside the front of the place counting for an hour and a half. Oh, no, sorry. That's just me. Welcome back to the show. We're here to talk about the world of pro wrestling.
The total package.
The total package. Lex Luger may not look what you remember him as nowadays, but, you know, the pictures on the posters and everything look great, and he'll be there signing autographs, so definitely want to check him out. This new store is going to have signings every once in a while, so keep your eyes open. Maybe, you know, get on their mailing list or follow them on Facebook. It's called Heroes Hideout. It's got a couple of places around. This is the newest store, and our friend Colin's involved with it, Colin Delaney, so we'll see what happens, man. So don't write it down your calendar right now. We're going to get back to talking about the world of wrestling. I want to talk a little bit about Most Wanted Items or whatever it was, Most Wanted, the show that followed up Steve Austin's biography show. It was like they basically what they did is they used the WWE warehouse in Stamford as the home base, and they seek out memorabilia from wrestlers, you know, and the whatever wrestler is going to be on. Next week, I think it's The Undertaker and Kane are out looking for memorabilia involved with them. But this past week, it was Mick Foley. And they were looking for his original top. It was like leather.
The original Mankind leather shirt.
Yeah, the Mankind leather shirt, as well as in a mask, an original mask, and some other Mankind memorabilia. And they would find, and you know, they I think that, and it reminded me a lot of Pawn Stars at one point, but also another kind of like seek and destroy. Where it reminded me of Pawn Stars, and I'm not going to throw that out without following up, is the wrestlers are given a certain amount of money to go and buy their stuff back from the collectors. And, you know, listen, we all know collectors. We're all collectors of certain things. If you have a prized possession and someone wants it from you, you're not going to give it to them for anything. And that's really what it felt like. Every time Mick Foley would find these products, these things that he was looking for, the guys were like, uh-uh. You have to give me something even more memorable than this. And it was an okay show. I mean, it went an hour. I think it went, you know, it's like it didn't have to be an hour. It could have been a half-hour show, you know. But we got to meet all the people, all the players on the show, at least in the first episode. The one guy from the warehouse who's also actually training as a wrestler. He's one of the guys that traveled around with Mick Foley. What'd you think, Ferbs? Interesting show. I mean, you know they're going to come looking for you with all the stuff you got, bro.
Yeah, I mean, me as a collector, I personally loved it. All three guys that were on the show actually are in a bunch of my collector groups that I follow. So seeing them on TV was pretty sweet. You know, honestly, I didn't feel like it was really like Pawn Stars at all. I mean,
it was only Pawn Stars when they were talking money on trying to buy the items back and stuff like that. You know? Yeah,
I mean, there's definitely value to a lot of these things, especially anytime it's ring worn. It definitely goes up in value no matter what it is. And just the overall history, it just, you know, it really gets me excited about the fact that it really seems like WWE is trying to do something with a potential actual Hall of Fame or some sort of museum. So we'll see where that takes place.
You notice there's a lot of Triple H in that show too, right? Triple H had to be in like every shot back from the warehouse, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably one of the
executive
guys lead, you know, one of the executives leading this push to get a actual museum, I would assume. But, you know, I loved it. I thought it was great. I'm really excited to see what else is going to be in there. So all this stuff just really intrigues me.
You guys all get to see it. Anybody else have a feeling? How about you, Danger?
Honestly, I did not like the show at all. I thought it was completely staged, choreographed. All three of those collectors have ties to the WWE, and you can tell it. The one guy who asked for the warehouse tour is something I would do if I had something they wanted. But other than that, it came off as hokey to me. It came off as terrible and not good. And I'll watch the next one to see how the Undertaker stuff and the Kane stuff goes, but it came off as very cheesy.
How about you, Rob? Did you get a chance to watch that?
Yeah, I liked it. I agree that it definitely seemed a little cheesy and a little fake, and there's certain things that I think were more interesting than other parts, like the, you know, chasing down that original Mankind shirt. It's cool. It's cool to see that stuff after all the time, whatever. The Socko, like, come on. Like, well, I don't want to give this up. Like, Mick Foley's right there. Like, grab a 10-pack of socks and a Sharpie and have him make you a bunch of them. Like, not that big of a deal. There were a lot of
Socko. Well, the best part with that one, he gave it up for, like, watching the Hell in a Cell match with his kids.
And, like, the ending of the episode was very fake and cheesy, but I popped. Like, I was laughing at the stuff with Vince, so I'm definitely going to be watching more of it.
I mean, it just, knowing some of these guys, like, especially the first guy, I mean, I don't personally know him, but that's just what his actual personality is. So I'm not really exactly sure if that's fake. Maybe some of the stuff he said was scripted. I don't know. But I wouldn't really call that fake. I mean, collectors are weird people. So,
well, like Triple H on the phone, like, oh, you promised him this or whatever. Like, that, to me, that's all scripted stuff. But almost everything on television is a work. Every reality show, everything like that. So I'm fine with it. Like, it's just, I think there's intriguing parts to it. And I will say, like, when WWE did do like a few videos on YouTube years back, maybe it was on the network originally with like the warehouse tours.
Yeah.
Like, that's some of the most interesting stuff ever. I want a museum or a Hall of Fame, like a physical one, whatever, big time. And so, and the more of that kind of stuff we get to see, I'm all for that.
Get more.
Yeah, I agree. I'm like seeing that stuff, you know, much like Furby, I'm a big fan. I don't know if I'd call myself a collector, but I appreciate like memorabilia. I could do without all the overproduced shticky stuff, but I'm still going to watch because I'm just interested to see what's actually out there.
Do you like that?
Do you think Stephanie always knocks 20 times around the corner from Vince's door?
Yeah.
Come on in, Steph. Like, no.
I wouldn't put it past Vince to be like, damn it, you need to knock at least 12 times.
It's a secret knock. You know how many times I do it. You know what I thought was funny was Triple H throwing Mick under the bus when Mick's like, well, I kind of promised this guy that I would tour him around the warehouse. And
that was the one piece of the whole thing I actually believed, that Triple H wouldn't want somebody coming into the warehouse.
He goes, Mick, that's why we're doing this. Because we want to make a warehouse, or we want to make a museum and everything. Why do you want to bring him here if we're going to, you know? And then I immediately think, oh, look, he's throwing Mick under the bus on the first show. So, and Mick's probably thinking the same thing because Mick's not a dumb guy. So
I love the value they had on the $1 million belt when they showed it in the beginning of the show. $300,000.
Wow, that's crazy. So, well, I'm going to give it another chance, even though I wasn't the biggest fan in the world of it. I'll give it another chance because it was, you know, it was fun, sort of, you know. I mean, Mick's a fun guy. He's around here a lot. So, you know, it's nice to, you know, nice to see him getting.
Are they really going to give up a barbed wire 2x4 from that Royal Rumble match, though? Granted, there were more than one in that match.
Yeah.
See the whole trade off and all of that. But, like, if your whole goal is collecting more memorabilia for this eventual museum or whatever, why are you going to give stuff up?
Yeah. What you didn't see is that the guy got it confiscated when he tried carrying it on his airplane on his flight back.
Yeah,
that's a weapon, my man.
He He also got more than just that, according to his Instagram page.
So. Oh, see, Ferb knows these guys, man. It's like, and they all, you know, like they were all, the one guy was a real snooty fan, too. He's like, well, I'm not going to give it to you unless you give me something better back, you know? It's like, this is a piece of history. It's like, it's a piece of history in pro wrestling. I mean, you know, you got to put it in perspective, my man.
I'll be honest, too. Like, if they're going to throw him something, like, even cash, I mean, these guys, like, are big enough collectors where they'll go find auctions. They'll go find pieces. Like, half the stuff that ended up in a lot of these guys' possessions are, like, are by auctions or, like, yeah. silent auctions or stuff that are on their website. They do that stuff all the time.
All that Mick Foley stuff, he said he bought it at auction, a charity auction. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, so it was all legit, you know. I thought it was interesting. We'll see what happens next week. I want to hit one more thing before we go to break. And maybe we won't get this one on WWE's Hidden Treasures, and that would be Mickie James's garbage bag full of her stuff that got sent in the mail this past week. Danny, tell the story. Tell the story.
Okay, so I will admit I don't know full details. I just picked up a couple of things from Mickie James and Nick Aldis this week. But apparently, I'm guessing when they did their layoffs or terminations or whatever you want to call it, that a lot of the men and women had items left behind, and WWE was kind enough to ship them to them. Mickie's belongings arrived to her in a box, but when she opened the box, inside was a trash bag with a post-it note on it that said Mickie.
Yeah, and the
it's like exchange. Kicking someone when they're down.
Yeah, folks, that's what it is when you get let go by WWE, okay?
Yeah, the Twitter exchange she posted, I know there was a video somewhere, maybe on TikTok, but dear Vince McMahon, I'm not sure if you're aware, I did receive at WWE care package today. Thank you. Hashtag always blessed and grateful. Hashtag women's wrestling matters with her stuff in a garbage bag. And Stephanie McMahon responded, I'm embarrassed. You or anyone else would be treated this way. I apologize personally and on behalf of WWE. The person responsible is no longer with the company.
There we go. That's the conclusion. We got to go to break. You're listening to the Pain Clinic on Fox Sports 1280. Welcome back to the Pain Clinic. I don't know how this song got in there. I'm not a Backstreet Boys fan. Welcome back to the show.
This is new, kids. You are...
Oh, whatever.
Way off.
Way off.
Yes, I'm lame. Welcome back to the show. We're here talking pro wrestling. We do every week. We want to thank you for listening this week. Of course, you know, we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. But that's not for a while. We got a whole segment still here to talk about. And I want to... We've talked about a lot this week. There's a lot of news. But first thing I want to throw out there, we got to, not only did we get T-Bar and Mace had their masks taken off this past week, and nobody said, hey, it's Dominik Dijakovic or whatever his name is. You know, it's like they, obviously we have a short memory on who that guy used to be. But what did you think about them demasking them, and now are they part of Bobby Lashley's group now? Or, I mean, they came out and, like, you know, beat up Drew McIntyre. And then, well, of course, Drew McIntyre beat them later. But what do you guys think?
Who knows what they really are anymore? The biggest thing to me was I popped a bit when they took the masks off. And then I tucked my tail between my legs the moment they still called them Mace and T-Bar. Like, come on. Like, we're not all idiots who watch WWE. Like, come on.
Yeah, they...
To be fair, the one guy was only on any WWE TV as an announcer, so...
This is true.
Yeah, they we also found out that their partners got moved, too, as well. That would be Slapjack and Reckoning. Both got moved to SmackDown. So, which would be Mia Kim.
Just mentioning those names, like, it sounds to me like you're talking about, like, a Ninja Turtles cartoon from 1984. Like, Slapjack.
What just doesn't make sense is if Retribution ain't a thing anymore, then why do they still have these silly names? Like, come on.
Right into the roster. Here's our two new members, Rocksteady and Bebop.
Well... That being news, they of course got beat by a 2-on-1 by by McIntyre at the end of the show. McIntyre, known famously for jumping over the top rope and not quite making it all the way.
So, slapjack,
yeah, something like that. Some other news.
The total package.
Yeah, the total package. Drew McIntyre.
Would it be a jack slap?
I don't know. That's a good question. Nevertheless,
we got some
other news. Dynamite pulled over 1 million viewers again this past week, which is great. They held over 1 million with no competition. It's funny is they
it's
have
a really good show too. Like, yeah. I know I was like venting about not promoting the Impact pay per view, but the main event was solid. The women's match was solid. Like, I thought it was one of their better Dynamites.
It was, and it was a lot of singles matches too, which I think maybe they were listening to the show when we were talking about too many tag matches, but which was really cool. But they're promoting this match coming up called the Blood and Guts match, which is going to be Inner Circle taking on Pinnacle, and supposedly it's going to be the only match on Wednesday, May 5th edition of Dynamite. It's going to be like a War Game style match. So they've got one match set for that day. Now, there may be some recorded ones that are earlier on the show and stuff, but right now that's the only match that's set for that show right now. So could you imagine going 2 hours? I mean, they did do an hour match before, so it wouldn't surprise me if they could, you know, drag. I mean, and of course, with as many guys as they're taking each other on, it's going to tell a lot of stories. But I thought that was pretty interesting.
I like that idea. I mean, you could have like you can bring in some people who did War Games matches, do a little panel, do the entrances, like spread it out. Like, I put the focus on that one match. Plus, if they're going to set it up with like the two rings side by side with the big cage and stuff, I always feel like that's, they probably don't have the ability to like do a live show and quickly take away the cage and everything at Daly's Place to do other matches. Like, I'm all for it being the only match that night. Like, give it the attention it deserves. So,
definitely builds the significance of the Blood and Guts match for sure by, you know, pinpointing it as the main focus of the May 5th Dynamite show. You know, with the pre-taped segments in there, I think it's going to kind of, you know, build up to like a almost kind of like a pre-show, but, you know, get some viewpoints on these style matches and, you know, really, really build it and focus on this rivalry between the Pinnacle and Inner Circle.
I would hands down rather see that one match for 2 hours on Wednesday than whatever series of matches they will run for 3 hours on Monday.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So we've got to get some quick news in here before we get out of here. EC3 announced he'd been hospitalized for 5 days with an infection on his Instagram page. You know, we hope he gets better real quick. Ronda Rousey and her husband Travis Brown announced that, now apparently she's not coming back anytime too soon. She's about that. She's like 4 months into her pregnancy. She's pregnant. Going to have a little baby Ronda. Some other news. MLW is now, they have a July 10th taping in Philadelphia where they're going to have people in the crowd. I think that's pretty cool. It's nice to get people back to these tapings. I'm super
excited for that too. They announced their Vice TV deal this week. I think they're going to be playing some replays, you know, starting in the spring, but leading up into the July 10th show.
If you go back and look at Monday Night Raw, watch Randy Orton's match with Matt Riddle. Randy Orton got hurt. I don't know to what extent, but you'll notice his right arm is dangling the rest of the match at one point. Hope Randy Orton gets away with it. Vince McMahon, or they came out this week that Vince McMahon, the people that were cut last week, where some of them were whining about their booking, and the only person I know that technically whined about their booking was Peyton Royce on the Raw Talk show, where she complained about, you know, how they've been booking her. But beyond that, that a lot of people say it was retribution for whining, you know, and maybe on social media and whatnot. Kushida came out and wrestled in shorts and no shoes the last week, as he is now the title holder, you know, the title holder, the WWE NXT holds the title there now. And Kushida's kind of changing. He's got rid of the Back to the Future look. He's going more of a Kazushi Sakuraba look, MMA fighter, which is good. I think, you know, he needs a little bit of a change up, and maybe that's why they gave him the belt. They said, if you stop doing Back to the Future, we'll give you a belt. Okay, and boom, now he's not even wearing boots out there anymore. I think it's pretty cool. On that note, we got to get out of here. I want to thank you guys for showing up. Thank you so much. That Rebellion pay-per-view is Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Watch Impact Wrestling, with the main event being something very big that we'll be talking about next week. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week, folks. You're listening to the Pain Clinic on Fox Sports 1280.